I do think I'm at a point in my reading life where I'm not super interested in reading books about feminism that don't include an understanding I'm not interested in reading books about feminism that don't include at least an understanding of gender identity and include trans people in their perspective.
If only we could take our love of reading to a new level.
Well, I've always wanted to start a book club.
Book club!
For
masochists and other deviants.
Hello and welcome to the Book Club for Masochists, where we read and discuss all the genres and types of literature, regardless of our actual interest in them.
Every month, we read books from a new, randomly picked genre. Then on the podcast, we discuss our reading choices, experiences, opinions, appeal factors, and other related topics as friends and library workers.
In this episode number 170, we are talking about the nonfiction genres of gender theory and gender studies.
My name is Jam. I'm a librarian in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
My name is Matthew. I'm also a librarian currently in Vancouver, BC, which is located on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Stolo people.
My name is Anna. I'm a librarian in Fort Collins, Colorado, USA, the traditional and ancestral homelands of the Arapaho, Cheyenne, and Ute nations and peoples.
My name is Megan. I'm an archivist in the National Capital Region of Canada, which is located on the unceded traditional territory of the Algonquin Anishinaabeg.
And that means it's time for announcements. Do we have anything other than the book list this time?
Matthew wants us to apologize. Not us, but the show. That's what it says in the notes, I'm assuming.
He's like, what?
Oh, yes. My apologies for the late show notes last episode that I'm sure nobody noticed. And also, I think the audio quality last episode was not the greatest, so I'm very sorry about that. Hopefully this one's better, but there were like reasons.
There was travel and situations, yeah.
Various settings, yeah, technology things that have to occur.
Due to situations. Our other regular announcement is there is a book list in the show notes of this episode of books in this genre by authors of color. You will find a list down below. I'm just assuming that you're looking at your phone currently at the show notes of this episode. If you look below the area where it shows where all of the books that we read and talked about, there's also just a little book list of books in this genre. By BIPOC authors, Black, Indigenous, and People of Color authors, gender theory and gender studies books. Check it out. There's some classics on there. There's some recent books. Look them up.
Did we ever talk about how someone in a library class used this as an assignment? I told them about our lists. It was someone teaching a class in like a library school, and they gave their students, they're like, okay, pick a genre that they haven't done and create a book list of books by BIPOC authors.
Sweet.
And I'm like, that's so cool.
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I like we're being used as like an example of like, no, wait, like no matter what genre it is, you can find books in this.
Absolutely. Yeah. Part of the reason we do it. Yes. To help diversify your reader's advisory, no matter what the genre is, there are books by authors of color.
Except Amish romance. We do have to, there's a footnote there, except Amish romance.
We did struggle with Amish romance.
But everything else, we found them.
There's a ton of Christian romance by authors of color.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, on to this genre.
We're talking about a different genre.
Or is it genres, plural, this month? Because the topic has two things, which is probably my fault. Because honestly, anything in the spreadsheet, I assume, is my fault at this point. It's like, why is it written this way? And no one has any memory of why it was written that way. So gender studies and gender theory, two things, one thing.
I feel like there is some overlap. It is pretty hard, unless a book like has theory in the title, to conclusively say if it is gender theory or gender studies. Studies is a pretty broad term.
Do we want to try and define either of these terms?
Well, it felt like that gender studies came out of what women's studies departments often were at universities. And so I went looking for like lit guides. What are they called?
Research guides.
Research guides. Subject guides. The pages that academic libraries often put together if you're beginning your study in a in an area you're not familiar with. An academic institution. So it's a little bit like how library studies programs became information studies programs, and sometimes they're just information studies programs, and sometimes they're both information and library studies programs, or whatever they tend to be. And so it kind of went, allowed a broadening of the kind of topics that you could think about when you were thinking about gender. We could talk about masculinities as well as women and femininities.
And non-binary.
All different types of genders and gendering.
Or I guess a gender as well, like a lack of gender also becomes a thing to be looked at.
Gender fluid, gender queer.
So I'm sure, I know other people have surely made this joke, but like, you know, the four genders, there's gender fluid, gender solids, gender gases, and gender plasma.
I follow a creator who does like the genders of the day every week, or the genders of the week once a week. And one of their posts was just like someone going, are you gender fluid? Yes. And then they get swallowed up by the person because they're just so thirsty.
Fluid.
I do love all those posts of like online forums that ask you to, you know, choose your gender. And it's like, yes and no are the two options or whatever, things like that. I do love seeing those. They entertain me to no end.
The blank number of genders is one of my favorite meme formats. Yeah. I've posted a few of my own. There was, the only one I can think of right now is I was at a community center and took a picture of like the hallway where the bathrooms were. And it said men's room, women's room. And in the back, there was a sign pointing to piano room.
The three genders.
The three genders.
Yeah.
Excellent. Good. So I guess we all read this. We all read gender studies and gender theory in the form of memes on the internet.
Absolutely. That is probably the main way I consume gender theory at this point in my life. That and like YouTube videos about horror movies I haven't watched. Yeah, I was going to say, to Megan's point that this came out of women's studies, it's I feel like obviously this genre came out of like society and the way that it is and the ways that it's bad. But like, yeah, it came out of women's studies, and women's studies, I feel like this is a complete paraphrase of the history of women's studies, came about because like, most subjects that you could study did not include women. Up until like, you know, not that long ago, I remember hearing from an author that like they were in a literature class in a university in probably like the 90s, and they didn't have any women on the syllabus, and they asked their teacher about it, and the teacher was like, or professor, excuse me, professor was like, I don't think any women have published anything that's worth studying at this level.
I don't think that instructor is worth listening to at that level either.
No, I don't think that. Yeah, I think that's pretty obviously transparently incorrect. But, you know, is not that old of an idea. So yes, this is a genre that comes to us out of the ways that society is bad, essentially. One of the ways. I think, I don't have more thoughts at this time. I'll let someone else talk.
So I was taking, in terms of thinking about this, that there is like that, because of the way it was worded, of gender studies and gender theory, there is this kind of background out of academia there. But in reality, your average person mostly takes it in through memes and through like other more approachable forms of media and reading. And so I was thinking about different ways in which it reaches into everything from comic books to, you know, like more general read type of nonfiction to biographies that are intended to really specifically touch on those issues and topics as well. And so that was more of the way in which I was thinking about doing my reading for this month, mostly just because I did actually have like a really solid, thickly right in the middle of the scholarly issue book that I wanted to read. And I was like, there is no way in this entire universe I am going to make it through that book this month. My brain is not up for this. So I was like, well, let's find an easier way to get through this. But I did have what I really wanted to read, but it was like way deep in the scholarly side of things. So I gave myself an out is what I'm saying. Basically.
That's okay. Yeah. If we want to move into background with this genre, I do feel a little bad for not reading more or not getting further through what I picked to read this month and feeling like not super prepared for this episode. Like I didn't take any notes for this one. February is a short month and I had a busy month, but also like there is a period in my time where this was basically all that I read. Like from like senior year of high school to like mid college career, if I was reading something for fun, it was usually within the world of gender theory and gender studies, and also for school because I did minor in women's studies. So like I feel like I did a lot of accessible pop culture-y reading. There's a Bitch Magazine anthology that I remember reading. There's a book called Body Outlaws that was formative and like introduced me to a lot of writers whose like work I sought out in other things. And some like classics, Room of One's Own by Virginia Woolf. I feel like an English professor. Nope, it was high school. English teacher. Why do we have two words?
There's also instructor.
Lecturer.
Instructor, mentor. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And boy, you know, take that into the academia and use the wrong word and they'll have opinions.
I know. Yes, a high school teacher turned me on to Virginia Woolf.
And I'm sure there might have been opportunity to study gender through your university studies as well in class.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, those books I mentioned are ones that I know I sought out on my own. I read a ton of stuff for school that I'm not going to name all the titles of, because they were like in anthologies and parts of other books or were like super subject specific and maybe less interesting to a reader's advisory audience.
Mm-hmm. What do you think someone who asks for this genre is looking for then?
I think it depends on where you are. Like if you're in a public library, maybe they need like a primer text, something that helps them identify the different thinkers in the space, the different streams of thought that you're going to come across and what differentiates them. Someone on Reddit recommended a fairly robust like queer history, a graphic history that has been very useful for me. But if you're in an academic space, maybe you're going to ask more questions about, you know, what they mean and how that needs to be framed and like go through that whole process of getting more details about what they mean when they ask for gender studies or gender theory.
What their assignment is, that's what you ask, because that's the vast majority of why you get asked in those spaces. I also think that a lot of times people don't come up and say like, I want a book on gender studies or something like that. They come up and say like, I'm looking for something, you know, thinking about, you know, queer identities or femininity or women in society or problematizing masculinity or like, you know, a lot of different niche components of this pretty broad area of study. I mean, there's a lot of different tacks that you can take to look at this. So
it's also right now, it's Women's History Month, which is another way that people might approach books in this topic.
Sure. I mean, when I was in CEJEP, which is Quebec's version of your last year of high school and your first couple of years of university. I would hang out in the periodical section because it was relatively quiet and just like read the feminist journals. But I read a few things that felt important to me in the university sort of era. Jack Haberstein's Female Masculinities and Julia Serrano, The Whipping Girl, stuff like that. Very mid-2000s, I think, of its time. And more recently, more about like gender in sports. So like people who are transsexual and want to compete in the sport of the gender of their preference and conflicts around that. So
I wanted to drop in Gender Outlaw by Kate Bornstein was another like formative one in undergrad that I read.
S. Bear Berkman as well.
Mm-hmm. So I would say I probably didn't read very much of this when I was younger around this area. It was not for me personally a particular component of what I was trying to unpack earlier in my life, but that's just, you know, for me personally. And then as I've gotten older, I'm unpacking it more and more. And so now it's kind of a regular like dribs and drabs each year. There's probably a handful of different titles that I read that would be in this area. So like last year, I listened on audiobook to like Bell Hooks' The Will to Change about masculinity. Year before that, one of my favorite reads was All the Rage, Mothers, Fathers, and the Myth of Equal Partnership. That's about parents, basically, and how we experience parenthood. And somewhere in the last couple of years, I read For Her Own Good by Barbara Einreich and Deirdre English. And it's from like the 70s or something, I think. Been around for a little while, and it shows its age in some spots, but like, boy, those first like chapter or two, I was like, man, this is a good primer on on this. And then my absolute favorite read of like 4 or 5 years ago was The Argonauts by Maggie Nelson, which is a sort of experimental memoir of her relationship with a gender fluid partner and building a family and having children. Or a child with that partner. So like there's dribs and drabs pretty regularly that touch within these areas and concerns and thoughts and unpacking our social relationship and cultural relationship to gender. But only for me, it's like an ongoing little piece that's figuring regularly now as I get older into my reading and into what I want to give myself time to unpack in my personal reading each year. It's a little bit of space for that. So actually, I was really excited for this month, and then I was like completely mentally burned out and was like reading, what's that? Oh my God, this is so hard.
Reading is watching videos on YouTube, right?
Totally. That's what reading is, right? 100%.
Like that's what we discussed this last month, like last episode. Like what is a book, a video on YouTube that we watch?
Yes.
As long as it's got subtitles.
Yeah. Binge watching YouTube videos on Minecraft. That's totally reading, right?
Is playing Marvel Snap a book? There's lots of words in it. You got to interpret it. And there's characters. And
Anna, you also have all those books about spinsters.
Yes, I do have a lot of books about how we conceptualize and treat women as single individuals who, by choice or situationally, end up outside of partnership throughout their adult lives. Because I find that a fascinating topic in terms of how our society treats single women. It's a very particular and interesting relationship that our society has with single women.
This is not a genre that I really seek out very much. Because I think it is so often academic or my perception of it is that it's very academic. But I definitely do read things about gender, if not actually gender studies or gender theory, which is like, where is that line drawn? And so I read the first volume of X Gender last year, which is a manga about someone being non-binary. There's the quick and easy guide to they, them pronouns, which you could also consider something that fits into this category. If it's a comic, I'll read it is really what it comes down to. I see multiple people giving me looks like, of course, yes.
We are our natures. We are just continuing to prove it.
We are our bingo squares.
Yep.
So how did we find the books we read this month? I have what I will say. The first thing I did was I wasn't really sure where to start, and I wanted something really short. And so I searched for, you know, those very short introduction books. There's a thousand, like thousands of them. There isn't one on gender. There's no very short introduction to gender.
Silliness.
So if someone wants to pitch that to them, they should publish it. Because I was really hoping to get, like, you know, a short introduction to gender as a topic before I went into other stuff. And
gender's too complex. They just can't fit it in.
All the other topics they can do that with, but boy, they got to gender and they were like, oh man, I don't know. We can't do this with this one.
Yeah.
I was really surprised. It seemed like something that, like, it would be obvious to have one about that topic, but I couldn't find it. So
yeah.
The list of very short introductions. I'm looking at the alphabetical list. It goes from garden history and then gene spelled G-E-N-E-S.
Do they have one for like women or like
masculinities?
Mm-hmm.
There's American women's history. So it looks like gender is a real not a strong point of the series.
Hmm.
Gap.
Hmm. Do they have a feminism one?
Feminism, yes.
Okay. That's what I would expect them to have that one for reasons and not others for reasons is sort of, yeah, somewhat unsurprising.
One of them's just about fire. That sounds really cool.
Okay. Back on topic.
Okay. So, yeah. Back on topic.
I will say I did not read one of these, but a number of Bell Hooks essay collections are very slim. Feminism is for Everybody, Bell Hooks. If you're doing your own podcast where you're reading gender studies and looking for a like slim intro book, Feminism is for Everybody by Bell Hooks. It's like 100 pages, I think. And it's great from what I remember. I read it, you know, 10 years ago.
So I, at the beginning of this month, I pulled off of my shelf a book that I had started reading a couple years ago. I don't remember how long ago. And I was like, this isn't exactly it, but I had meant to read this book for so long. I had started reading it. I got like a couple of chapters in, but it's written really well, but it's really academic. Like it's an thick, dense read. And it was so painful to read. It was so disturbing and bothering me so much that I just like at the time I was like, I'm going to stop this right now. I don't remember what else was going on in my life where I was like, I got to step away from this book. So I was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to tackle it again. And I like opened it up to the first page, read like half of a sentence, and then was like, no, I do not have the capacity for this book right now. Anyway, so the book is called Down Girl, The Logic of Misogyny by Kate Mann. Someday I will get to this one. It wasn't this month. So after like staring at that book for a very long time, thinking that I would somehow get myself to read it, I realized I did not have much time. So I then also realized that I now work at a really large academic university with a huge library and like a big collection. So I went upstairs and looked around and was like, I can't read almost any of these. I don't have the capacity for any of them. So I went to this little collection they have of young adult books and like children's and young adult books. And I picked two things off the shelf there. And one of them I was like, oh, I think we even own this at home. And we did. So I read both of those two things that I got out of that section.
When I saw that this was the genre, I was like, oh, I own so many books about gender. This is easy. I'm just going to go to my shelf and pick something. And I went to my shelf and I was like, I've either already read these or they're super long and not sparking my interest at the moment. And it turns out most of the books about gender that I own are in like a box in my parents' attic from when I moved. See our next episode about moving with books. So yeah, I had owned fewer books than I thought that I did in this genre, and went searching to see what the library had. And I feel like it was surprisingly hard as like a person who feels pretty knowledgeable in this genre, surprisingly hard to search for gender theory, gender studies books and capture all of the things and also not get things that were not what I wanted. I feel like I looking through the search results, there's so many books that I know that the library has that aren't there, that aren't being captured. And I feel like it might be a similar problem to like the anthropology and sociology problem of like the overarching field of studies does not return you know, more specific, interesting results. It gives you back very like broad intro to academic subject type results when there's more accessible and more have a more specific hook or study area that you might want to read that don't show up from that. And I found one of the tools that was the most useful looking at books was on BiblioCommons from the public library user curated lists, because there's definitely other people with expertise in this area that have done the work of curating lists. There were a series of lists that I'll try to find again and include in the show notes of essential reading in gender studies and women's studies by era. So like from the last 20 years and then from like the 80s and 90s and then, you know, back and back, that were like, you know, the things that you want in a book list, like diverse and like, well, seemed like well curated and not just like 10 random titles the way that searching by subject heading seemed to be returning.
All right, I will back up real quick to some of what you said in terms of Libby as well as an app. I did go in there to look and see if I could find anything on Libby. And like searching by any kind of browsing means through Libby for this topical area was just like very disappointing and frustrating.
Yeah. And I should say specifically, like, I feel like a lot of books by trans exclusive feminists came up and not so many books by transgender writers came up, even though there's like the library has them. They're there. They just don't come up as high on the list when you just search gender studies.
It's funny. I just searched for gender and then limited it by like the last year because I wanted to get something recent. And the book I found was about has trans in the title. And I was like, uh-oh, is this good or bad? And I had to go up and I read some like reviews of it online before I decided to actually read it and be like, okay, no, this is not a TERF fart book. Trans exclusionary, radical feminist, and feminism appropriating ridiculous transphobe, I believe. But the book wasn't. But it's so frustrating that is something to consider, that you have to think about when you see these books. Because honestly, like just looking at the cover and even reading the back cover isn't going to tell you what side it's going to be on. I know libraries have dealt with a lot of both sidisms about having these books that are dehumanizing people. So
I did notice, though, because I did similar to you, I did a straight gender search with some filters and whatever, and that often the questionable ones would have just cesspools of review sections, like basically a comment section to any terrible newspaper article. So I quit that. I did a sort of a general Reddit search to see if anyone had any recommendations. I looked at the LibGuides, as I mentioned before. I went to the library and just picked out everything they had under gender, but nothing really appealed to me. So I remembered a few things from university and was like, well, let's go to the local university. I can get a community card and let's just go to the section and look at the books. Why not?
You didn't have a community card already, Megan?
Not for the university.
I'm shocked.
I'm lazy.
Yeah.
Megan, you have so many books out. I assumed you just had all of the library cards as well.
That worked out the best for me because I was most interested in more academic-y texts this month for whatever reason. It was not a good reading month for me in general.
Okay. Do we want to talk about what we read?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll go. So I read most of one book, which was very dense, but I also just wanted to mention that I started and didn't finish up, like almost solely because I didn't realize that it was an ebook. I didn't realize it was due and it just disappeared and other people had holds on it. But I started reading A Burst of Light by Audre Lorde. I love Audre Lorde. I've read her before, but I haven't read this one. And I checked it out in part because I love her and it was one, you know, a collection of essays I hadn't read. And also because the other book that I chose is super, super dense and academic. And I wanted something a little more like essay-y and poetic and readable and also like felt like life affirming, whereas like the academic text I wrote was like was affirming in some ways, but also tough. Anyway, I started A Burst of Light. I didn't get that far in it. The first essay is an interview about sadomasochism, which Audre Lorde was against. And I feel like one thing I appreciated was that the interviewer included all of these details about where they were and what was going on when the interview was happening and said, like, specifically, I wanted to mention these things because every conversation about this occurs at a specific time in a specific place. And I wish so many things included that disclaimer. but yeah, it just like it was not it did not make me super excited to keep reading. And like, I know that it is not like representative of her body of work, but it was just a tough first, essay to read through. But I feel like also a good reminder for me that like the discourse has always been with us, in its various forms. And, there has always been like infighting and complex issues that get totally flattened. And I don't regret reading it. I think it was interesting to think about that kind of thing, to like think about like how these discourses that like now seem so like just the context is so different, remembering that has always been a thing. But yeah, I did not finish that one. Just wanted to mention it. You know, I didn't go into the reasons why I'm pro sadomasochism, but I feel like, at least sadomasochism neutral. But I feel like it is broadly understood to be a more complex issue than a lot of Audre Lorde's contemporaries understood it to be. Anyway, the other book that I read. It's the book that I actually read, Histories of the Transgender Child by Jules Gill Peterson. This one, as I mentioned, is pretty dense, pretty academic. It is also like sometimes tough to read at this contemporary moment when transgender children are under attack as much as they are. But yeah, I think it is a really valuable history. It starts with recorded accounts of people that might be considered transgender. I mean, yes, that we can read as transgender as early as like the turn of the century, so like the early 1900s. And sort of, I feel like I'm going to struggle to summarize it because it is so detailed. Draws from like the history of medical accounts, because that's like the documentation that we have of trans lives, but also rejects the causal relationship of like medicalization to trans people. This idea that like we figured out how to make trans people in the 1950s, and that's what trans people started. Rejects the sort of medical model and that's, posits there's always been trans people. There experiences have always been like diverse and different, and it is not a history necessarily of all suffering either. Like one of the cases in the 1930s is Val, a trans girl in rural Michigan, I think, who just like lived as a girl and like went to school, and they're like, hey, this is Val, she's a girl, can she get a private bathroom? And school was like, yeah, in not so much detail. Yeah, I did not read 100% of this book, but I read several chapters and then skipped ahead to the conclusion. And I might just want to read instead of trying to continue to quantify this, just read a few sentences from the conclusion. The 21st century figuration of the trans child as futuristic does harm when its novelty raises the historical precedence to the demands for recognition, dignity, and a livable life that are being made by and on behalf of trans children today. Yeah, I don't know if it was as tight of a button of a quote as I thought that it was. I am struggling to summarize because it is such a detailed account, which is so valuable to have, but is also like tough to read. Both like in the sense that it is very dense and academic, and just reading about like the way that children's bodies have been mistreated by medical science in the name of preserving ideas about normal gender and sex.
Oh boy, there's a chapter about intersex people in the book I read.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not a very happy chapter to read about how the medical establishment treated and treats intersex people.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, that came up to me too, just while you were talking here, GM, made me think about, I read two very short, just little like intro to the concepts, sort of like for young adults guides. And even in reading those, one of the thoughts that I remember having partway through was like, oh man, medicine gets to define so much about this and they do so much harm in that process. And that's a really like painful aspect of all of this, is how much harm medicine is doing by defining and setting boundaries on this.
Yeah, absolutely. And intersex people are definitely like a big part of the research in some of the chapters here. And I feel like the author, Gil Peterson, was sort of positing that historical narrative is not like separate from the history of trans people. And there certainly was like a effort on the part of the medical establishment to be like, no, you're a different thing. Like these people, we need to give surgery, and you people cannot have surgery. Yeah. It's just upsetting. But the conclusion is great, and I feel like so clearly lays out the ways that enemies of trans people, is the best term that I could reach for right there, people that hate trans people or fear them or, you know, reject them or want to see them not exist, focus on trans children and continually treat them as if this is a new phenomenon. And because that makes it seem more risky or makes it, you know, seem more vulnerable. And also these are, you know, people that are easier to control, and the ways that focusing on trans children is such a politically strategic and also like deeply ahistorical and dehumanizing to children way to try to legislate and attack trans people. I think an incredible book, like incredibly detailed, incredibly valuable, like super intersectional, like is constantly like looking at the ways that the experience of white trans people and trans people of color and white intersex people and intersex people of color were different. Great book. Not a super easy read. And I do want to say, because it sounds like I'm making it seem like all totally grim, that there is also something like very like affirming to reading about trans people that lived in, you know, the early 20th century, and were like asserting themselves and their identity outside of, you know, not having a community or being able to see themselves in media, but still like existing and asserting their right to exist.
So I read a book that referenced yours, Jam.
Oh, cool.
Oh, that's a good segue. Can't beat that one.
I read Before We Were Trans, A New History of Gender by Kit Haim, who is a non-binary trans person from the UK, an academic.
Mm.
You've heard of this one?
I put it on hold and then it didn't come in. And so I read this one. I also had heard the author of Histories of Transgender Child on the Gender Reveal podcast. So I was also interested for that reason.
So this one came out last fall, I believe. So it's pretty recent. And I feel that in some ways the title is going to attract more controversy than the book needs in some ways or wants. I think I found this to be more of a book about historical gender nonconformity, which the book directly addresses and talks about. And it's like, it talks about Before We Were Trans, like how do we talk about people before we had the language we currently talk about? How do we refer to people from other cultures and other times who did not fit within our current views of gender and who did not necessarily fit, but who might have fit it within the terms of gender at their place and time or might not have? And what does that look like? And the difficulty of doing historical research about this sort of thing, because even if it is like a first-hand account of someone who was gender nonconforming in history, how much were they willing to admit or talk about publicly? And it talked about there were lots of unhappy examples of things that happened to people in this book, but also just some things, but like just really talking about how like we don't know is really what it comes down to. But it's like, but here are some people who are worth talking about and here are some things that are worth talking about, and we will never know how they truly identified or how they truly felt in their bodies. You know, it's good to know that gender nonconforming people is not a new thing, I guess, is really what it kind of comes down to. It also is a critique of history having to have an unemotional certainty, because it talks about that, about how like very much when you're writing academic history, it's like often it's like, here are the facts, here is the unemotional approach to this thing, as opposed to being like, no, this affected me. Reading about these people can have like actual emotional effects, and this is my emotional reaction to it, which was interesting. But yeah, it looks at like gender as a cultural and spiritual thing, and how it interacts with like religion and different places, and lots of interesting examples of like different examples of gender nonconforming people. And I think it is not as thorough as encyclopedic as some people might like it to be, but it also talks about how like, you know, you can't do that because of what I talked about already. Like these stories were not written down often. Like we often hear about, oh, this person got revealed to be a different gender after they died and they left no records of how they identified through their lives. And it's like, oh, were they a trans person, or were they just pretending to be a different gender so that they could have a job that they couldn't have as the other gender or whatever it happens to be? And it's like, well, we don't know, but it's worth sharing their stories and thinking about the stuff anyway. I feel I didn't give the best description of this book, but it's relatively short. It's not overly academic-ese. Like I was able to read several chapters in a row in one sitting without, falling asleep or whatever. So I think it's worth looking at, and I think it's interesting.
I did not read anything current. I went back and I had remembered loving Julia Serrano's Whipping Girl. And there is a more recent edition, but I had to like interlibrary loan it, and I only picked it up today. So I didn't even get a chance to like read the introduction and see what kind of updates she made at like 10 years after the original version edition had been published in 2007. And so the subtitle is A Transsexual Woman on Sexism and the Scapegoating of Femininity. And I had a really good experience reading through this again. There was a lot, like I have really positive associations with this book, but I hadn't remembered a lot of what was talked about within it. So it was really nice to go over again and see the kind of terms that were being discussed, the kind of situations. And I think what Julia Serrano's trying to do here is really navigate a space which is still kind of ongoing between folks who sort of ascribe a biological determinism to sex and gender, and then sort of this post-structuralist, like gender as a performance, and gender is meaningless kind of space. And she makes pains to be like, there is definitely worthwhile conversations going on gender bending and gender queer spaces, but really wants to focus the conversation on how this hides the concerns and issues and experiences of transsexual women who, you know, they're not really bending gender. They're just transitioning and living as the gender that most fits them, fits their identity, fits their feelings, that kind of stuff. So being more specific on that, what I thought was helpful. There's a lot of like, not a lot of, but like the first bit will cover some of the like trans 101, gender 101 bits, making sure, because it's written for both a public audience and an academic audience. So it has to do the work of making sure everybody understands the terms that will be used moving forward. So I think it's fairly accessible as a text, but still allows the space to talk about things more specifically. There are terms like oppositional sexism and cissexual privilege, which were very helpful in talking about different situations where we might have called them something else, and like this blanket trans misogyny or transphobia in different situations. So it was a very enjoyable reading experience. Possibly you want the newer edition. In the middle of this, I picked up the Queer, A Graphic History by Meg John Barker and Jules Scheel, which is also a 2016 publication. And that was really helpful to put where Julia Serrano is arguing sort of in context with the history of queer studies and gender studies. I checked. We don't have queer studies on our list. So I don't feel bad about bringing this up, because this is much more focused on queer studies, which is kind of more about sexuality than it is about gender in a lot of ways. But it does talk about some of the academics and the theorists that Serrano doesn't necessarily name, but you can understand what the context is a little bit better. So that was helpful. And apparently I should just reread more books. This was my first reread for the podcast, and I entirely enjoyed it. So more rereading.
Yeah. So I read two books aimed at young adult audiences, or maybe primarily, but maybe not, obviously not entirely, like, you know, everybody can read whatever they want. But one of them is Beyond the Gender Binary by Alok Ved Menon. And the other is A Quick and Easy Guide to Queer and Trans Identities by Maddie G. and J.R. Zuckerberg, which is a graphic novel. And the Beyond the Gender Binary is from the Pocket Change Collective, which has a super adorable little logo, by the way. Their logo on here is like a pocket that is like stitched onto the cover, and it's really cute. Anyways, that's neither here nor there, but I thought the logo for them was cute.
I also love these as a teen librarian. Like, they're so cute and small and easy to bring to community visits and stuff. And like a nonfiction book from the teen section that looks really visually appealing.
Yeah, I can totally see why. It does have a great cover image on it too. Like, just very cute little book. This one is a little bit more of like a memoir. Alok talks about just kind of growing up growing up in Texas as a child that was not presenting as traditionally masculine, and the challenges that that created. And so it's of the two of these, I would say this one is more about the challenges and how you face them and the challenging conversations that occur around affirming gender identities for everyone in the way that makes the best sense for them. And so in addition to sort of a memoir-focused discussion of some of those issues, there's also the last part of it has a series of different ways in which these conversations come up, where people sort of dismiss or deny or undermine or question or just generally make gender identities outside of the binary less does not give them space to exist. And so it breaks out four common types of arguments as dismissal, inconvenience to the person who is upset about different gender identities, biology, and the slippery slope arguments. And then it just presents different types of things that people say and what's, you know, how you can approach addressing those kinds of conversations and be like, no, that's like not a great way to talk about this. And here's why. So that one's kind of a little bit more on like addressing issues of shame and issues of how you move past shame and what does shame do within these spaces, and shame both for people who have various types of queer identities and people who have more cisgender identities and how those types of shame all play back onto power and control over the queer identities. It has a lot more to do with that, but obviously like presented in a manner that is very readable and digestible, no matter how much experience you have in life yet or how much experience you have with reading complex texts, which this is not, which is great. It's very approachable. And then the other one is a graphic novel. It's presented with basically two different styles that are like storylines, sort of. I don't know if that storylines. Sort of storylines that are presented next to each other. One of them is a bunch of snails that are getting a lecture from one snail that is like the pet of one of the, like at the very beginning, it starts of all things like at like a campfire in the woods, and a snail has been brought along by one of the humans at the campfire. And that snail is like, yes, my human has taught me all about this, because they say that's my dad, Bowery. They raised me in here and take really good care of me. They're a queer educator and bring me with them to all of their events like this one. So the snail then goes and educates all its fellow snails about queerness in humans, and gender identity in humans. And it's great. It's very cute. But the other storylines that are in here are the Sproutlings, which at the end of the book, so these are that's the snails, I believe, are Maddie G. And then the Sproutlings are J.R. Zuckerberg. And the Sproutlings, as they describe them in an outro piece at the end of the book, they say, "When I started to develop the world of the Sproutlings, I thought about a kinder world without oppressive, archaic gender expectations. While this may seem like an idyllic vision, I realized that even in a world where a spectrum of identities is visible and welcomed, there's still a lot to navigate internally and interpersonally." And that's very much what the stories of the Sproutlings are. It's like, even though all of this kind of different identities are all welcomed, there's still a lot to navigate. That doesn't make it like a perfect universe magically, right? You still have a lot of interpersonal and just your own identifications, as well as how you relate to others and your relationships with others, to navigate. Anyway, so it's broken into sections with questions for each, like, what is gender identity? What is gender expression? What does dysphoria mean? What is asexuality? And then it just walks you through a presentation of each via the snails and then backs that up with a storyline from the Sproutlings. So yeah, of the two, it feels more like, well, it addresses some of the challenges that you can experience socially from your families, from at workplaces, things like that. It's very brief addressings. Mostly its focus is on affirming, on explaining and affirming different gender identities and how they exist in the world. And so it feels much more just of an affirming read than the other one felt more of a like struggle read. So if I were like recommending, like want something to feel like power, having a bit of a battle and I'm going to get through, there's Beyond the Gender Binary. And if it's more of a like need information and to explore, because I don't know, but I would like something that affirms this while I'm thinking about it, it's the Queer and Trans Identities, the Quick and Easy Guide to Queer and Trans Identities.
And that one is Snails.
And that's the Snails one. Yes. The Snails and the Sproutlings.
Very important.
I seriously, like the snail being brought along on the camping thing was like so delightful to me for some reason. I don't know.
Do we own that one?
Yes, we do own that one. I did borrow this copy from the library, but only because I was like, I'm pretty sure we own this, but I can't remember. And I'm just going to make sure because I want to read it. So I borrowed it. I also wanted, like, I was thinking about A Quick and Easy Guide to They, Them Pronouns by Archie Bongiovanni and Tristan Jimerson. But they didn't have a copy of that there that I could grab. But Archie Bongiovanni actually grew up in my hometown. My mother knows their father quite well. Like, this is like the small universe of, yeah.
Appeal factors. Gender is weird. Let's read about it.
Everybody's got gender. unless you don't. And in that case, you'd also probably want to read about it.
Yeah, true.
I think one of the reasons people might read these books is that for self-affirmation purposes, to read and understand that people are going through, if not the same thing, then similar things. And I think that comes back to zines. I think there's a lot of zines that cover aspects of that topic as well that people would find relevant on these topics. The book I read actually cited a zine in the epilogue afterward part, which I was like, holy shit, I don't see that happen very often, which was cool to see though.
One of the books that I remember reading that I got from my local library in my hometown, their sort of limited selection of books about feminism that I can recall, was Girl's Guide to Taking Over the World, which is a anthology of feminist zine excerpts, which was also influential.
When I think about me as a reader over time in this space, I think about like not reading as much when I was younger. And I think that was kind of a representation of a time in my life where I was not thinking about this too much because I've never felt a huge amount of tension between the gender is assigned at birth and my gender identity and expression. So given that early, there was a lot of space when I was growing up where like, it's so easy not to engage if you don't feel the tension personally. It's so easy not to engage. But I think it's no longer as easy as it was at this particular moment because the rates of violence are growing so fast. And it, like at this particular moment in the United States, if you're in the United States right now, you're looking at this on the news all the time and like some really ugly stuff that's happening. And I think it's not a space to ignore at the moment because I just think that there is so much happening that we need to be able to engage in these conversations wisely. I don't know. Anyway, so that's one of the things I was thinking about. But the other thing is that your gender identity changes over time too, or can,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so it can become more of a thing you want to address and think about at different times in your life. So you can come back to it from different perspectives. You may come back to it at one point in your life and want to look at it one way, and then another point in your life and want to look at it a totally different way. So
it's one of the problems I feel with the current discussion around this, about some of the stuff where people are like, you have to make this decision and then that's what you are for the rest of your life. And it's like, no, like people change. Like there are many different things and these things are not set in stone.
Yeah. I also want to be more specific and say like, not just that, like your gender identity might change, as in like, you might, you know, figure out you're trans or figure out, you know, transition and then detransition, and that's okay too. But like, I use the term non-binary because people know it, but I really don't like the term non-binary, if I'm being honest, because here's a secret. I don't think there's such a thing as a binary person. I don't think actually anyone is.
You're either a one or a zero, Jam. I don't see how confusing this is.
Yeah, these are very clear. One, zero.
Cis people don't exist, and there's no such thing as a binary person. Cis people don't exist is something that Jules Gill Peterson said on Gender Reveal. So I am quoting her there. But yes, but yeah, that it is a endlessly complex topic that you are going to feel many different ways throughout your life about.
And I can also see, so a lot of readers may be coming not just from the perspective of their own changing gender identities, but of the changing gender identities of people in their lives. So, you know, family, friends, people who they want to understand more, the kinds of expression that those people are choosing for themselves, right? But also you get the other side of that, which is like how to oppress more. So, you know, go either way.
I feel like it's interesting that I think all read books that are about trans people or about gender identity. When I feel like so much of the history of this genre is in women's studies and feminism, not that those things like don't intersect, obviously. The book Megan Read, Whipping Girl, being a perfect example, that's a book about feminism. I feel like I've read tons of gender studies and women's studies books that are about like the experience of women and even like about the experience of cis women in particular. But I do think I'm at a point in my reading life where I'm not super interested in reading books about feminism that don't include an understanding of, let me rephrase, I'm not interested in reading books about feminism that don't include at least an understanding of gender identity and include trans people in their perspective. Even if that's not what they're totally about, if like, that's not in the perspective, then you lose me at a certain point.
There's also like the topic of like masculine studies, masculinity, mm-hmm. Which is another one that is fraught, I feel, to some extent, in the sorts of people that are writing about those topics, or the sort of people you hear about writing about those topics.
We'll have some good ones on the book list in this episode.
Good.
Oh, good.
Excellent.
That's good, Jam, because that is an area that I have wanted to read more in, but finding something that doesn't feel just deeply off-putting is challenging. It's challenging. I know there are some out there, but there's an awful lot of real not productive ones in that space too. But that doesn't have to go into the episode. I just wanted to say I'm excited to see what you got on the on the book list.
Well, I think with that we can end and go into the end, our outro. That's the word. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Book Club for Masochists. Please find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever else you find your podcasts. Please like the show, subscribe so you never miss an episode, and consider giving us a positive rating and or review. If you've already done that, thank you very much.
For all our URLs and social media accounts, the four in our name is a numeral. You can go to our website at bookclub4m.com, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/bookclub4m, and find us on Twitter and on Instagram at bookclub4m. Our email address is bookclub4m@gmail.com.
On our website, you can find show notes that will provide links to things we mentioned in this episode, social media info for everyone who appeared on this episode, and our genre-based book lists of titles by BIPOC authors.
You can suggest a genre or a title for us to read, or request a recommendation from us. We have a form. You can fill it out. No promises on reading your suggestion, but we will give you a recommendation if you ask for one.
All opinions are our own and do not reflect our places of employment, if they exist.
Our theme music is To Arrakis by Dark Sun from the Free Music Archive.
New episodes are the first and third Tuesday of every month.
Join us again on Tuesday, March 21st. We'll be talking about moving and management of books.
Then on Tuesday, April 4th, we'll be discussing the genre of domestic thrillers.
Yeah, it's also just possible that none of us can read anymore because we struggled with this. Like,
tongue twister time. Damn, I listened to your episode of Hark this week about fucking pie, which was very funny.
I'm glad you liked it.
Someone just needs to record a version of that that is just full of swearing. Just full of like an actual version that's just full of swearing. I don't even remember what the song is.
Rock Around the Christmas Tree. There is the line in Rock Around the Christmas Tree. Later we'll have some pumpkin pie, but a lot of singers swallow, though they don't enunciate the P's, and so it just very much sounds like later we'll have some fucking pie.
Later we'll have some pumpkin pie. And
no. Once you get told that and you listen to it, like you're like,
you can't unhear it.
100% they're saying fucking pie. Like,
great. Matthew got stuck mentally in a different location.
Catus interruptus.
Yeah.
And also, I have a cat.
Hi, Ernest.
Possibly I swallowed it.
Excellent. A+, everybody. Good job. High fives.